Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about the NYSE jumping into Bitcoin derivatives and a central bank near you may be coming out with some cryptocurrencies of their own. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and more on the FinTech Newscast. All right, let's get going. With me this week is Monica.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good, good. Glad you're here.
Likewise.
All right, a lot going on in the world of Bitcoin. The price isn't doing so hot these days. People have pulled back a lot on their development of all that Bitcoin stuff. There are some things still being developed, right?
That's right. So the New York Stock Exchange this week on September 22nd launched Bitcoin futures. And to be clear, these are not the first Bitcoin futures to be launched. The CME has already had them in place for a number of months now. But the first trade happened on the NYSE's version or platform, and the trade was a little over $10,000, which is in line with the current price. This is part of a venture called Bakkt. Continuing our trend of having strangely spelled names, it's B-A-K-K-T.
Oh, I thought it was a Russian oil field or something when I first saw that.
No, it's actually backed, at least partially, by Microsoft and Boston Consulting Group.
Oh, no, the spelling, B-A-K-K-T.
Oh, no, I think they were going for is it a homonym where it sounds like but isn't spelled like?
Right, right.
And they wanted it to sound like Bakkt. Their stated goal is to make cryptocurrencies more transparent and regulated such that they could be used in retail situations. And in fact, Starbucks is partnering with Bakkt to let customers convert their digital assets into dollars for store purchases. So, you know, you're kind of starting to see a little bit more kind of coming through. On the futures side, of course, the appeal of futures is that it allows merchants and other investors to insulate against price swings. And as we mentioned, CME already has these, but there are some differences. So ICE is the owner of the New York Stock Exchange. Their futures feature physical delivery, which sounds very funny when you're talking about Bitcoin.
A digital asset, right?
Exactly. But basically, it means that you're actually paid in the settlement in Bitcoin, whereas CME's futures currently settle in dollars. So some traders and some experts think that physical delivery actually helps keep futures prices closer to the price of the underlying asset. And I don't know if that's true, but it will be interesting to see how CME's and NYSE's futures prices differ for Bitcoin.
Huh. A big part of that must be being able to, and I brought this up last week, actually, like I have custodial services of mm-hmm. those assets. And we talked about cold storage versus hot storage. They would have to come up with the code right away and not get hacked and have all that infrastructure we've been talking about that's slowly evolving, much like at the same speed as nature's evolution, it seems like.
No, it's much faster than that.
It takes some time.
We don't have billions of years, not to get our Bitcoin futures.
A lot of generations have been passing.
Right? One thing that was interesting is that for the, this is from an article in the Wall Street Journal, and towards the end of the article, they are speaking about how for the New York Stock Exchange's futures, they've really worked with much smaller firms to do the clearing. So like Goldman Sachs clearing platform is not involved in the New York Stock Exchange futures for Bitcoin. So it's kind of been a real business opportunity for these much smaller firms. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting to see how some of this stuff evolves. But when you were thinking about companies that maybe
provide the cutting edge
technology services, it's not always the smallest firm. So we shall see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's definitely competition coming from bigger companies. Like we always mentioned, Gemini and Coinbase. So another little notch and a little fin has sprouted in the evolution here.
Bitcoin's adolescence continues.
Yeah, very angry adolescence for sure. Of the central banks jumping in the game and giving the cryptocurrency the official sheen onto the currency, which is kind of like the opposite of the point of the founding documents of Bitcoin especially.
Well, yes. For Bitcoin, I think that's true. But it does depend on what you want your cryptocurrency to do. Actually, what I should say, what you want your digital currency to do.
Right. Well, now there's so many different cryptocurrencies for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Bitcoin was founded for one thing, I mean, it was open source, so then you can make it for anything else too. And the EU too has been looking at it, right?
Yes. So the Wall Street Journal actually has a relatively long and very informative article that's kind of giving you the lay of the land in terms of what are central banks across the world thinking about in terms of moving to a digital currency. So we should be clear that in a very real sense, central banks already have and issue digital money. Because digital money is the stuff that they lend to commercial banks. And then the commercial banks lend it out to the rest of us.
Right. It is just a few taps of a computer screen, right?
Absolutely. But if a central bank created a truly, solely, only digital currency, then that's a little bit different. That could be something that could be potentially issued directly to the public. It could be considered legal tender. It would also do something that our good pal Steve would be super psyched about. It could drastically reduce settlement times from, 3 days for, brokerage trades, credit card accounts, to minutes.
Steve does have that cognitive dissonance with settlement times.
Doesn't like waiting for his payment to settle.
Why isn't it like an IM?
Yes, exactly. So, and in addition to reducing the time to settle transactions, it could also significantly reduce fees. So there are a lot of things that central banks might be into about that. At the same time, it could have some interesting and not necessarily desirable knock-on effects. So one of those is that it could potentially undermine commercial banks. So if you think about what a central bank typically does today, it's acting as a bank to other banks. It's not, I can't go to the Fed and open up a checking account. But you could potentially see how having a digital currency could potentially take that path.
You're kind of directly linked into their blockchain, right?
You could. You wouldn't have to, but you could. And if you did do that, let's say, for example, that the U.S. Federal Reserve was like, hey, we're going to have this digital currency and it's totally cool. John, come on, open up a checking account. Or maybe I should say a savings account. Should the Fed charge you interest? Because if it did, then it would definitely start undermining commercial banks, right?
Disintermediation.
Yes.
Is that word? Yeah.
And it's certainly not a requirement that central banks would choose to do that, but it's something to think
about. But that always happens when you have a new, more efficient way that buggy whip makers get the short end of the buggy whip.
Yeah. And at the same time, you think...
That's right. I'm calling all of commercial banks buggy whip makers. Mm, that's right.
Don't send the hate mail to me. Send it to John. And at the same time, if you did have central bank-backed digital currencies, they could also potentially undermine private cryptocurrencies. Because many people, not all, but many people would prefer to have kind of the imprimatur of the reliability, the stability of a centrally backed digital currency versus, I don't know what the heck is going to happen to Bitcoin, but I have a good sense of what I feel like a digital dollar is going to do tomorrow.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
should I
for
call
sure.
It a Fed coin?
I mean, it gives you that comfort, right? Especially if it's tied, would it be, I wonder, like a stable coin where it's tied one for one with the national currency?
I don't know that it has to be one or the other, right? It all depends on how you build it.
Yeah.
On the flip side, so that could be bad for private cryptocurrencies. But then you start thinking, you fast forward this. You say, okay, well, let's say we move to a world, as we have been doing for a while, where more and more of our payments, more and more of our spending, more and more of our digital transactions or our financial transactions are digital. And if you think, well, what if the government and let's be real, the Federal Reserve is part of the government, or central banks are, if they have kind of perfect insight and visibility into spending, well, you can see how that might actually boost private cryptocurrencies, right? Because people might want to hide, and not always for nefarious reasons, but hide some of their financial activity from the government.
And it depends, too. If the government coins are designed for currency purposes, that doesn't mean they're optimized to, like, let's say Tron is designed for entertainment and mm-hmm. downloading movies and all that good stuff. I don't know, Ripple is designed for international payments. Well, that might get incorporated in, actually. Yeah. It depends on how much they make it app, dApp friendly. And if you can't really develop on it, there's still room for that to happen somewhere else.
Yeah, I think there's more potentials than there are certainties when we think about what these centrally backed digital currencies could look like for now. But that is changing. So the EU is open to e-cash. And I think Mark Carney, who has been the head of the of Britain's, yes, and Christine Lagarde have talked quite a bit about what that might look like in the EU. But China is actually much further along than anybody else. So they are actively planning a launch of a digital yuan by early 2020 and even possibly this year.
Really? That soon?
Yes, yes. And this could have some very interesting effects for international finance, but also for China. So China actually has already surpassed the U.S. as the world's leading trading nation. And as we talk about all the time, they have tons of digital payments. Like, that is so much more a part of their culture and financial system than ours. And if they have a digital coin that can actually be used as an alternative to the dollar, and in fact, the yuan has actually been used in more and more international transactions than it has in the past, as you would expect with China's rise, that could potentially give them some additional leverage against the dollar and the United States government for, you know, any kind of trade war or sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. It's just that China's actually in a position to do something about it. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
So one thing about China's plans is, this won't surprise you, their central bank will obviously control the digital money supply, but they're also going to track user IDs. So, you know, I think it will look a certain way in China, but it will definitely be something to watch and see. How it's used, how it's adopted, how it's misused, because all tools get misused eventually. Any way you look at it, as central banks move to this, we should be able to at least expect faster transfers, lower transaction costs, potentially more efficient monetary policy. This is what the Wall Street Journal says, but I don't know that I believe in this exact phrasing. A risk-free payments network for the public. I feel like risk-free is a very strange strange term that's difficult to guarantee. But certainly you can see why kind of the masses might be more interested in using a central bank backed payment.
Say it three more times quickly.
I could barely get it out the once compared to, you know, Bitcoin.
Well, knowing that it's being developed by the government and it's got to be kind of bulletproof, you know, security-wise, they're going to test it.
Risk-free.
Every week. Yeah, for them to make that claim, right? They got to do
the
all kinds of testing.
The Wall Street Journal made that claim. I don't think central banks will.
Right. Well, my point is that security is going to be a big priority. So
yes.
As long as Lockheed doesn't develop it, a little dig at the F-35 thing.
What about Boeing?
Yeah, right.
737.
Yeah, so even if you hire outside contractors and, you know, the top in every field, I mean, this would be such a wide use case for any country. And the incentive to attack it and find some exploit, you know, that there's definitely a negative side too. And it's, I don't know how, there is no way to keep something digital completely safe as of yet, so...
But there's no way to keep anything completely safe.
Right, right. So, it's harder to carry gold bars. Have you ever held a gold bar?
Gold is incredibly heavy.
It's amazingly heavy.
That's why whenever you see them in the movies, they've got like a bag full of gold. It's a total joke.
Like the horse would collapse in real life. Yeah. That's right. That's right. You know your gold. You know your...
I know my periodic table.
I was going to say, your elements there.
I mean, I don't have it memorized, but yeah. Basically, most metals are heavy.
It's very heavy. Yeah. So, I would be wondering about how they could... how long it would take them. I don't think it is something we have to worry about. Just because of that development time and the high, high levels, even for a very talented team that they could hire, it would still take some time. And a lot of testing for something like this to reach that level of a government secure kind of thing. I'm a little skeptical on China coming out so soon. I thought you were going to say 2024 or something like that, which is I would thinking that's aggressive for developing and testing. But they're very motivated to watch their everything that their citizens do. So.
I also think that the trade war that Donald Trump picked with them has made them even more eager to be less reliant on the dollar system.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely true.
And the U.S. generally. So.
Yeah, yeah. All right, now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating story behind it, especially the way Monica tells it.
My final bite this week is $300. And this is the amount per year that a gentleman named Marcus Tamayo charged his clients to handle their investments.
Great. How can I sign up to have him do that?
Well, before you sign up, I think you should know that Marcus Tamayo is currently being basically sentenced by the SEC for doing this without any of the appropriate licenses or disclosures.
And his middle name is Madoff, by the way. A little known fact.
He also is an airline baggage handler who started a side business named Bored at Work. And Bored at Work took in about $150,000 worth in fees in 2017. That's a lot of $300 clients.
Wait, $150,000 divided by three. How many people did he? Okay, ask for the financial planning license and some background, maybe a CFP, something like that.
I don't know. I mean, I
guess that's a lot of people.
He met a lot of people, and his clients were, so far as I can tell, at least primarily pulled from his fellow employees at the airport. So, how did he handle the client accounts? Basically, he got them to, after they paid, he got their login information to the airline retirement accounts, and he would go in and invest all of their assets into a single mutual fund that was available through the airline's retirement platform, and then sold everything when he thought the price was right.
Oh, okay. So he just went into their 401k account and just moved things around in their limited universe of investment options.
Totally. But he would have taken them out of all the things they were in, put them all in the same
one
account.
He's known as an anti-diversification school of planning.
We don't know. It could have been a target date fund.
That's true.
Anyway, Marcus Tamayo, you probably have more balls than common sense.
And a silver tongue, maybe. You know?
Quite possibly.
Let me tell you about investing your retirement. I can't talk my wife into managing her investments, much less a stranger or coworkers.
And also, talk about a low, low price. I mean, these robo-advisors, they'll get you more than $300 pretty fast.
Yeah, this is the new fintech field, baggage advisors. Huh.
This is not investment advice. This is not legal advice.
This is what not to do.
This is what not to do.
For sure, yeah. You know, there must have been so much uncertainty from these employees, I guess mostly his coworkers, about what to do with their 401ks, that it really brings up a good point about this lack of knowledge and lack of confidence, any idea of what to
and
do.
How utterly crappy and badly designed the U.S. retirement planning system is.
also, so that they would turn to the first person, I would think, that would offer them a solution.
Of course they would, because most people are not anything close to feeling comfortable, capable, well-versed at all with investments. And with the 401k system that we have, we basically say to them, you need to be a total investment expert. Otherwise, you're going to be living in penury on Social Security.
Also in every other field of your life, too. You have to be an expert or else you have a hard time. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear out there about what to do with retirement. And if you can offload that, $300, I guess, seemed like a bargain to not have that worry, apparently. So, yeah, it does speak to all the scam artists out there that there's an opportunity to take advantage of this fear.
Although I am going to give one piece of advice. You should probably not give your money to someone who names their company Bored at Work.
BAW Enterprises, maybe, was how he marketed it. I don't know. All right, so on to a different kind of scam. I mean, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. You know, way back in the day, we used to hear about, at least I haven't heard of Overstock.com for a while, but they were one of those early companies that took advantage of the naming and really jumped into, specifically Bitcoin, pretty wholeheartedly. They put their money behind what they were doing, right?
I think not specifically Bitcoin. They created their own cryptocurrency.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Overstock had their own currency as well.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called. I know, that's what I want to call it, but I can't remember if that's what it's called. There's going to be a book written about this at some point.
I'm surprised there hasn't been. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff.
Well, because it all keeps happening. Like, you can't get a book out as fast as this stuff keeps happening.
Not until someone goes to jail first, or?
Well, you know, the former CEO, he just absconded to South America, like, last week. He's not in jail yet.
So Overstock is still around, apparently, and they put $2 million, and that's my final buy, $2 million, into a blockchain-based identity firm called Evernym. So kind of like pseudonym. There's other ones. I can't remember.
So it's not your fake name. It's your forever name.
Right. And this is one of those applications. I remember I was so excited to read about all the things that were happening at the Ether Foundation. And this was one of them, to have that immutable identity, something somebody couldn't tamper with. And they mentioned examples like refugees. They have to leave their country and then they lose all their paperwork, their passports. Mm-hmm. And they could have this identity management thing on blockchain. It would help secure against fraud, of course, and identity theft. You know, those efforts are still out there. I just haven't heard about that. They don't get a lot of press out there lately. Cool. No, it's one of those things that I thought, oh, this is a great solution for blockchain type of technology. Still out there. So, and Evernym is a company that's working on that's working on something called SAFE. And, you know, that's a good name, actually. SAFE is also actually one of the bills in the House for allowing banks to work with cannabis growers, too, by the way. Yeah, it should be just passing. So that's what I thought. I thought this was about marijuana. SAFE is also this product that Evernym is working on to do identity management. When I first started reading, I thought identity management, like on a computer for managing employees. Mm-hmm. But it's much broader than that. It's like you're the one place. So let's say you open a bank account. Everywhere you go, you have to show your ID and go through the whole process. So this is a world, if this got rolled out widely, accepted widely, where you wouldn't have to do that. That would be already kind of on the blockchain. The first surprising part is Overstock is still out there. I had no idea. I haven't heard
really?
About them.
Oh, I got my kitchen rug from them.
You recently? Yeah.
A year ago.
Still out there. You know, that they're putting $2 million into a really useful technology, I think, in general, with this company called Evernym. So still some stuff developing out there.
Well, and certainly Overstock has a lot of interesting things going on.
But we have to get into that later.
Well, it's not really super fintechy, but, you know, their former CEO, the one who's run off to South America, he had like this super ongoing long war with short sellers. But then it like all got to be too much for him. And he's just, he's quitting. He's not going to do it anymore. And he sent this epic email to all of his employees where he's basically like, you know, I'm about to get on a plane and go to the beach in South America, you know, and I don't plan on coming back, which is just like wild for a CEO to say. And also, he was romantically, I think, involved with Maria Butina. Like, you know, the NRA Russian spy.
Who wasn't she involved with?
Exactly.
I keep hearing her name tied to so many people.
I am just telling you, my kitchen rug and this Evernym are the least interesting things about Overstock these days.
Fintech. Yeah, yeah. Well, we could always use a good story, Monica. And there sounds like there's 5 or 6 of them in there. So that sounds pretty interesting. All right, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. And thank you for listening.
We'll see you next time.